Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pelvic Zen, a show designed to promote pelvic floor wellness in men and women. My name is Caitlin McCurdy Robinson, and I will be the host of the show. I am a physical therapist at Sullivan Physical Therapy in Austin, Texas. Our clinic specializes in women's and men's health conditions related to the pelvic floor. Examples of pelvic floor dysfunctions include urinary and fecal incontinence, pelvic organ prolapse, constipation, chronic pelvic pain, sexual pain, or other sexual-related issues, and prenatal and postpartum pain. While many of these conditions are common, many people suffer in silence because they do not realize treatments are available or because they are embarrassed to discuss their symptoms with a healthcare professional. Whether you are experiencing symptoms and don't know what to do next, or you're already seeking treatment for your symptoms, this show aims to provide information and resources that will be helpful for you in your recovery process. Today I have the pleasure of introducing our guest speaker, Dr. Cavusi, from Austin Center for Men's Health in Austin, Texas. Dr. Cavusi completed his medical degree at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. After completing his medical degree, Dr. Cavusi completed a residency in general surgery and urology at Texas A&M Scott & White Memorial Hospital. He later completed a fellowship in reproductive urology at the University of Virginia Health Sciences Center in Charlottesville, Virginia. As for today's topic, Dr. Cavusi wrote the textbook chapter for vasectomy and other scrotal surgeries for Campbell's Textbook of Urology, and he was also author of the chapter regarding disorders of the scrotum, including post-vasectomy pain syndrome, which can be found in the textbook Practical Urology, Essential Principles and Practice. Dr. Cavusi has published multiple scientific articles on these topics, which can be found in journals such as Urology and the World Journal of Urology. It is my privilege to welcome Dr. Cavusi to the show. Thank you for joining me today on Pelvic Zen.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so to start off the show, can you tell the listeners a little bit about what the common diagnoses or reasons are that men have a vasectomy?
Yeah, absolutely. So vasectomy is one of the most common forms of contraception that couples together pursue. It's a very nice route to go for contraception because when you're comparing it, for example, to the female version or tubal ligation, it's much less invasive just kind of because of the way that men are built, where the vas deferens are very easily accessible, basically just going through the skin and a few small layers of tissue, rather than having to go into the abdomen like you'd have to for the tubal ligation, and it really minimizes any risk to any vital structures and has a very low risk profile and complication profile. And it's a 15-minute procedure that's done in the office with the patient awake where they basically fly through it without a hitch the majority of the time, and they're in and out. They walk in, have the procedure done, and walk right out about 15 minutes later. So it's a nice, quick, very effective way of achieving contraception for the couple for long-term permanent sterilization.
Are there any reasons outside of contraception that men have vasectomies performed?
Typically not. That is the primary reason the vasectomy is performed. You know, that when we're talking about vasectomy reversal, there are other reasons that reversals can be performed other than regaining fertility, but the primary reason to do a vasectomy that we see is just for contraception.
Okay. And to get ready for the vasectomy, is there any specific preparation process that the patient needs to go through?
I think the first one that's probably the most important one is the psychological preparation for the couple, for the man and also for the woman, and being certain that they're ready for that vasectomy and that what's approached as permanent sterilization. You know, when you look statistically, about 500,000 men in the United States undergo vasectomy a year, so it's an awful lot of guys. And the way I approach my patients with it is, you know, I always have a consultation with them before the procedure date so that we've gone over everything that they need to know and they have a clear understanding of what they're preparing for, but also of the understanding that this should be approached as a permanent sterilization. You know, as most people know, vasectomies are reversible. In fact, I do an awful lot of reversals, and fortunately we have an extremely high success rate. But because of factors like cost, the fact that reversals are almost never covered by insurance and that they require general anesthesia, that man wants to approach a vasectomy as a permanent sterilization. So that psychological preparation of, yes, I know for certain that I'm done having children, is important prior to proceeding with the vasectomy, and that's how I prefer for my patients to approach that. that being said, circumstances in life change, and certainly we see that an awful lot. And so when you look statistically at that 500,000 guys in the United States that have a vasectomy done every year, about 6% of them will change their mind sometime in their lifetime and decide to have a vasectomy reversal. So when you look at that number, 6% doesn't sound like an awful lot, but when you're talking about out of a 500,000 guys, that's actually an awful lot of men that are going to change their mind sometime in their lifetime.
Yeah.
That's the primary thing, is the psychological preparation. As far as actually preparing for the procedure itself, there is some variability from provider or physician to physician on what they offer. I do my vasectomies under local anesthesia in the office, so the patient walks in and walks out 15 minutes later. I do offer Valium ahead of time. That just kind of takes the edge off and knocks down a little bit of the anxiety about the procedure on the morning of. Even though it is a minor procedure, it's obviously in a very sensitive area, so this is something that can cause quite a bit of stress on the day of. So the Valium helps kind of knock that edge down. In preparation for that, I typically do recommend, especially if certainly if they take the Valium, but either way, it's a good idea to have somebody drive them that day. So they need to be prepared as far as having a driver to and from that appointment, even when it's done under local anesthesia. Besides that, it's not like having a surgery done where they actually have to go to sleep for it. So as far as eating and drinking beforehand is perfectly fine. I typically recommend that for the week before, they consider trying to stay off of blood-thinning medications like aspirin or aspirin products. It can certainly be done on those, but it will decrease the risk of swelling because those thin out the blood a little bit. And so those are primarily the things that I talk to my patients about prior to just getting ready. There are things I talk to them ahead of time about being ready for afterwards that they want to have kind of preparation for, and some of this has to do with whether they need to take days off work. If they're involved in physical activities or physical work, I have them try to refrain from that for several days after the vasectomy to allow them to recover most easily and not take any steps backwards. So we do have some discussion about ahead of time preparations that need to be made for actually after the vasectomy, things like using an ice pack for the first 2 days on and off. I put my patients in a jock strap that they go home in that they wear to the following day. They can all shower the day after the vasectomy. I don't really like them getting into pools or tubs for about 2 weeks afterwards. And I do recommend that they have tight-fitting jockey shorts or boxer briefs so that the day after the vasectomy, when they take the jock strap off that I put them in and shower, they want to wear something that's giving some support for about the next 2 weeks to minimize swelling.
Very good. And what are the risks or complications of vasectomy?
Sure. So there are a number of risks and possible complications. Really, they're few and far between, and the percentages where we see these issues, depending on the technique that's done with the vasectomy, have gotten extremely low. So what I'll tell you is the majority of men fly through vasectomy without any issues and have a relatively straightforward recovery, and it's behind them before they know it. The risks, however, can include the possibility of bleeding. It's very unlikely to have significant bleeding with a vasectomy in well-trained hands that are doing it an awful lot. If a man has a bleeding after a vasectomy, it's not life-threatening or anything, but the scrotum will get big and swollen. He won't like me very much until that goes away, but the odds of that are extremely unlikely in my hands where that's very, very rare to happen. The things that they can do to help prevent that, again, are trying to stay off of those aspirin and aspirin products and not doing anything too heavy or strenuous for the first week following the vasectomy. There's the risk of infection, which is about 1% or less with a vasectomy. It's done with a very sterile technique. It does not require any antibiotics before or after to minimize that risk. The risk is very low without that, and it actually does not reduce the risk of infection to put a man on antibiotics. The keys are very sterile technique, and so so that's the important part for the infection risk, which almost never ever happens. It's extremely low rate. The other risks include the possibility of damage to a very small artery that feeds the testicle blood that runs right alongside the vas deferens. I'm extremely meticulous and cautious when I do my vasectomies to preserve that, and there's a specific technique I use called a no-scalpel technique that helps preserve all these structures around the vas deferens that live very closely to the vas deferens, like that artery, like veins that drain blood from the testicle, and like nerves. you know, theoretically, even if you go in and tie off that artery completely, there are two other blood supplies to the testicle that cover the same area. So hypothetically, it'd be okay, but I want to preserve all that blood supply to the testicle, so I always preserve that. But that is a risk that can go along with it as well. The other risks can include the possibility of regrowth of the two ends back together any time in that man's lifetime, from a month after the vasectomy to 20 years after the vasectomy. And some of this is technique dependent. We've gotten better at our techniques where we've learned ways of minimizing that risk. And when we're talking about these improvements, they're small percentages, but you know, every percentage matters when you're trying to minimize that risk. So the technique that I use is where I use an electrocautery device to seal the inside of the vas deferens tubes on both ends after it's been divided. But most importantly, it's a technique called a tissue interposition, where there's some loose tissue called fascia that lives right next to the vas deferens. After it's been divided, I take that fascia, I pull it between the two ends where they've been divided, and I sew it into place there, in essence to make a wall or a barrier to not allow the two ends to grow back together. And study after study, that's been shown to be the very best way to prevent these two ends from getting back together and having sperm back in the semen, making that man fertile again. And that's been shown actually to be better than clips or ties or anything else. So that's really a key on minimizing the risk of failure of the vasectomy in the future. And the other risks that can go along with it is a risk called the post-vasectomy pain syndrome, which is long-term chronic pain that can come and go in the testicles in some men after vasectomy. It's pretty rare. It's about 1% is what's seen in the studies that are done well. You know, if you look it up online, it's one of these things that would scare you pretty badly, because you'll see all sorts of things and all sorts of studies. But it's important to look at the methodology of these studies to see which ones are done well and appropriately to give us valid results. And what we see are that that the studies that are done well show us about a 1% risk of getting this chronic pain in the testicles long-term after vasectomy. So it's fairly rare, and there are things that we can do about it.
Okay. And can you talk a little bit about, I know you mentioned a few things to be cautious about after the surgical procedure. So you mentioned a bit about wearing the fitted clothing or the jock strap shortly after. Is there anything else, any other specific activities that should be avoided?
Absolutely. So I'm very conservative with my patients. You know, I don't want to limit them too much, but I'm pretty conservative as far as my goal is for them to fly through the vasectomy, fly through the recovery, forget it even happened, and have it behind them as soon as possible. So the ways that I've seen that that is most achievable is by playing things very safe early on after the vasectomy. So my recommendations is a man can be up walking around doing normal stuff that day after his vasectomy. My preference, though, is for the first day or two, the more he can be off his feet, kicking his feet up on the couch or, you know, taking it very easy, the less swelling he's going to get from gravity effect. If you look at how men are built, the scrotum is in a very gravity-dependent area, so the body heals, and a vasectomy is a very minor procedure, but any procedure is a trauma to the body. The body heals by sending fluid and cells to that area to try to heal, and ultimately that fluid and those cells are going to drop to the most gravity-dependent portion. So if a man's on his feet all day long, that gravity-dependent portion is going to be in the bottom of the scrotum, which is going to result in more swelling. Swelling is really the enemy that causes pain, so if we minimize swelling, these men usually fly through this recovery. So being off their feet as much as they can the first couple of days, I think, is a good idea. Ice should be a man's friend after the vasectomy for the first 2 days, on and off at intervals, trying to keep swelling down as well. And then those tight-fitting jockey shorts or boxer briefs for about the 2 weeks afterwards. The only restrictions I really have for my patients are for the first week, I ask them not to do anything too heavy or strenuous, no exercise, no intercourse. After that week mark, if they're not sore or swollen, in my opinion, they can go back to doing anything they want. I might stay off a bicycle if they're a cyclist for a bit longer, but even that, after that week mark, they can really gauge and see and let their body tell them.
Okay. Are there any specific things that tend to be related to the post-vasectomy pain syndrome? Is there any, has there been any correlation between maybe performing an activity after the surgery or doing anything, or is it just kind of a random draw?
No. Yeah, not really. There's not something that a man can do or cannot do to prevent that syndrome from happening. What the activity afterwards is more likely to do is just to make that immediate post-vasectomy recovery a little tougher. If they do a little bit too much too early, they're going to get more swelling, and that's going to cause discomfort in the short term. Our understanding of the post-vasectomy pain syndrome has advanced quite a bit due to some pretty good lab studies, but we still don't perfectly understand it. What we used to think was, okay, when you block the vas deferens, you don't stop sperm production. Sperm is still being produced. Millions of sperm are still being produced in the testicles. And we thought that that pressure backup is what caused that in some men. Well, we've gotten very good studies that show us that when there's a blockage in the vas deferens, pressure never actually backs up to the testicle. However, it can back up to a structure called the epididymis, which is a tubular network that sits behind and around the testicle that goes from the testicle to the vas deferens, where sperm work their way through from the testicle. That's where they learn how to swim and mature before they enter the vas deferens on their way out. When you block the vas deferens, we used to think, okay, so men get congestion of the epididymis when you get backup of that pressure. That congestion causes swelling, and that's what causes pain. We don't believe that anymore, because really if that was the case, everybody that gets a vasectomy should have pain afterwards, because that pressure buildup should be happening in most guys when there's a blockage over time, and you don't see it in the majority of men. What we believe happens now is we believe that these little tubules in the epididymis try to protect themselves because they don't like that high pressure, and they act kind of like a pop-off valve mechanism. Well, they'll have minor micro perforations, and they'll basically perforate and pop a bit to relieve some of that pressure. When they do that, there can be a little sperm that leaks out from one of these tubules. The man's body doesn't recognize his sperm as being self. It recognizes it as being foreign, because sperm lives in a tubular network within the testicle and within its whole path on the way out, where it's what's considered immunoprivileged. The immune system doesn't get access to it. So what happens if there's one of these little perforations? A little bit of sperm can leak out to relieve that pressure. The body doesn't recognize that sperm as being self, and the immune system attacks it by sending in fluid and cells and causing an inflammatory process. That's really no big deal. That probably happens more than we know, and that nobody, the guys typically don't notice it. We believe what happens when the post-vasectomy pain syndrome occurs is one of these microperforations with this inflammatory response just happens to be in the wrong location, right next to one of the microscopic nerves that send that pain signal through the spinal cord to the brain, and it stimulates that nerve. And then we believe that there's a change that actually happens in the structure of that nerve. So even when that inflammatory goes away, that nerve is kind of confused and thinks there's pain there even when there's not a stimulus for it. And on and off over time, it just triggers and starts firing for reasons that we don't completely understand and causing that pain response.
Okay, interesting. And I know it's a little bit off topic from the vasectomy, but when that does occur, is there a specific is that an indication for a reversal, or what do you do during that?
A reversal is an option for that. That's not my first option for it because it's awfully expensive. Unfortunately, reversals are never covered, almost never. I've never seen one covered by insurance. And the insurance company doesn't care why we're doing a reversal, whether it's to resume the man's fertility or if it's for pain. So when you do a reversal in the studies, what we see is about a 70% chance of getting rid of that pain by doing a successful reversal in men with post-vasectomy pain syndrome. However, that's an awfully expensive way of trying to get rid of that pain. What is probably a better option is first we approach it with conservative therapy. So we give a man typically around 3 months of using something like heating pads, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, wearing tight-fitting jockey shorts. That's a great time frame to consider pelvic physical therapy for pelvic muscle relaxation and manual massage. And if none of these conservative measures helps, and after that time period the man says that it's no better, is not significantly improved, and is still affecting their quality of life, the way I typically approach it is my next step is to do a nerve block in the clinic, where I'll inject injectable numbing medicine along where I know those nerves run that typically cause this type of pain. I give that man 10, 15 minutes in the office to see how he responds to that nerve block, and I'm not doing that for a treatment. It's really more for a diagnostic testing to tell me if he's a candidate for me to do something more to those nerves. If in that man with that nerve block, the pain completely goes away or gets significantly better, then he's a candidate for a procedure to try to get rid of this pain called a microsurgical spermatic cord denervation, or a neurolysis. They mean the same thing. That's done with the man asleep under general anesthesia through about a 2-centimeter incision alongside the penis and the groin, and we go down with and find the area where these nerves are, which is pretty superficial. It's a relatively minor procedure, although it's very specialized. There's a couple handfuls of us in this country that do an awful lot of these. We use an operative microscope that magnifies everything we're working on while the man's asleep by about 20 times so we can identify the branches where these nerves run, and then we tie them off and divide them. And by doing that, if that man responded to that nerve block in the clinic, his odds of resolving that pain, getting rid of it completely forever with that procedure, is around 70%. There's an additional 15% chance that we'll make that pain better, but it may not completely go away, which quite frankly leaves us with about a 15% chance that all he gets is an incision and a recovery and the pain doesn't get better, which is our worst case scenario. We've never seen a reported case that with that type of technique the pain has actually gotten worse. So worst case scenario is a 15% chance that he goes through a procedure that didn't help. But the odds are certainly in our favor that we either get rid of it or make it significantly better. Insurance providers typically do a much better job covering that type of surgery than a vasectomy reversal. And when we're talking about similar odds of getting rid of the pain, it's an awful lot more cost-effective way of trying to get rid of that man's pain rather than reversing him, in my opinion.
Yeah. Very good. And then outside of the post-vasectomy pain syndrome, is there any other reason or why someone may want a reversal? And if so, what are the problems with having a reversal?
Sure. So the vasectomy reversal is primarily, again, pain is one reason that you can do it for, but I would tell you a denervation may be more cost-effective and just as good of an option. The other primary reason to do it is to resume fertility. And so there's a gamut of reasons that men and couples change their mind and decide they want to have more children. Sometimes you see this in people that just change their mind. But, you know, with about a 50% divorce rate in the United States, we do see people that are getting remarried and are wanting to have their fertility potential back to achieve a pregnancy with their new partner. So vasectomy reversals are primarily performed for resumption of fertility. The vasectomy reversal is a much higher level of specialized operation than the vasectomy is. What we see is the best outcomes in surgeons that are specialty fellowship trained in vasectomy reversal and that do an awful lot of them. We see that in good studies. We see that clinically, that the percentage success rates are an awful lot higher with those of us that have had specialty training and do a lot of these. For example, my success rates, my personal ones, are within the first 8 years after a vasectomy. My vasectomy reversal success rates are around 97%. From the 8 to 15-year mark, that drops to about 95%, and then after 15 years, it drops to 75%. Some of that drop in the success rates from the time from the vasectomy has to do with that back pressure since that vas deferens tube is blocked, and sometimes that can damage tubes towards the testicle and make it that a higher level, more technically difficult reversal has to be performed, which has lower success rates. That's why we see that drop after 15 years. So vasectomy reversal is a very good option for a lot of couples that want to regain their fertility potential.
And would the preparation or the complications, or I'm sorry, the preparation or the precautions after surgery be similar to the initial vasectomy, or is it a little bit different?
They're a little bit different. First of all, I do the vasectomy reversals under general anesthesia, so the man is completely asleep. That's typically considered the best way to do it because we're operating on tiny microscopic structures to get these tubes back together in the perfect watertight fashion to allow that reversal to have the highest success rate. You don't want that man moving at all. It's not because it's such a big operation, but you just don't want him moving at all. So I do that in the operating room with the man asleep, and that's generally thought to be the appropriate way of doing that. There are two techniques that I apply to it. I either do it microsurgically using the operative microscope, much like we talked about with the denervation that magnifies things, and I can sew those two ends back together using instruments with my hands. There's also a robot-assisted technique where the surgeon sits in a console in the corner of the room with your head in a monitor that basically looks like a video game machine, and there's a magnifying camera above the body feeding images that are real-time to that console. And then microscopic instruments are driven with what look like little joysticks to do the suturing for us. So either one is a perfectly good technique with the same outcomes, the same incision, and the same recovery. as far as after the vasectomy reversal, so beforehand it's a bit different. We don't want our patients to eat or drink after midnight the night before the reversal because they have to have general anesthesia for it. I'm a little tougher on my reversals than I am on vasectomies. The reversals, I ask them not to do anything too heavy or strenuous for about 2 weeks afterwards, and importantly, not to ejaculate or have intercourse for 3 weeks afterwards to give them the best chance of this reversal working and being successful. Otherwise, the recovery is very similar. The way I do the reversals is through one incision that's similar in size to one of the vasectomy incisions, and what the man experiences postoperatively is very similar to his recovery from the vasectomy, so he kind of knows what to expect already. But the limitations and restrictions I give them are a little bit tougher after the reversal. But they'll use ice the day of and the day after, wear tight-fitting jockey shorts again for the first couple of weeks, and try to take it very easy for the first couple of days, very similarly to the vasectomy.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for all of that information. I'm going to open up callers, and we'll see if anyone has any questions for us. So for those of you listening, the guest call-in number is 858-777-5907. All right, well, it does not appear as though we have any callers today, but thank you so much for providing us with your time and all of your knowledge on this topic.
Thanks so much for having me, Kaylin.